Blog Talk Radio.
December 19th, 2011, and this is a very special show because Christmas is just days away, and we have a very special guest coming on today. His name is Kevin Folliard. He's written Christmas Terror Tales, and we'll be getting to him shortly here on the Writer's Lounge. Before then, though, I'd like to let you know, once again, I am Tom Riddell. I'm your host, and tonight we're going to announce a special guest host for the show, and I'm going to save that for a little bit. And until then, what I'm going to do is tell you where you can find us on the internet. And where that would be the Writer's Lounge blog over at tomriddell.com. That's tomriddell.com/blog. And also in the review section of the blog, you will notice in the upper right-hand corner a Blog Talk Radio player. That's where you go to listen to the show as you read the review of our authors. So that's a neat little feature that we just added not too long ago, and I hope you enjoy that. Also, of course, we have an email. It's tw11@yahoo.com. So drop us an email anytime that you would like to give us any ideas that you'd like to hear on the show. Or if you're interested, eventually we will be opening up authors for future shows here past March, and I think right now, and we are right now booked up through March into the first part of April. So soon we'll be opening up for the rest of the year from April on. Upcoming guest authors here on the Writer's Lounge, of course, we've got Kevin tonight, Kevin Folliard, and next week we will be bringing on, her name is J.T. Barber, and she's written a book called Reflections of a Whisper, and so she will be on the day after Christmas on December 26th. The callers for tonight, if you would like to call, we will ask our guest author if they would like you to call in. I'm sure that Kevin probably won't mind you doing that, but I'd like for you to hold all calls until we talk to Kevin regarding that. And let's see, that pretty much wraps it up for the introducing of the show for tonight. And as I said I would like to introduce, and I know everybody's been waiting for this, there's a couple people out there on the Writer's Lounge Facebook page, which is also another place where you can find us, who has indicated that he is very excited about the idea that I'm going to be introducing a new co-host to the show. And tonight we have a co-host. She's filling in as a guest host, but I would like to let everybody know that eventually in the new year she will be my full-time co-host. And to introduce her, drum roll please, no drums here, but her name is Robin Eduardo. And she's from New Jersey, and she has been around the writing world for quite a while. In fact, if you're into zombies, you might have seen her at a zombie convention. So with that, I would like to introduce, and I'm very excited to introduce, Robin Eduardo is my new co-host here on the Writer's Lounge. How are you doing, Robin?
Thank you. I'm doing good.
That's good. And so everybody is just waiting to hear about who you are and what you are and what you do. Could you tell us?
Who am I? That's a fun question. No, I'm just your average horror fan, but I do like sci-fi and fantasy, but primarily horror, and I enjoy reading, but my latest thing in the last decade or so has been writing, and I've recently signed a contract with Dave Arana Enterprises for my first novel. Instead of publishing a short story in an anthology, I've gone full out and decided I'm going to write a novel. And I was lucky enough to get it picked up, like I said, by Dave Arana Enterprises. And it's an exciting time for me. And the book is currently, it's completed. It's going through edits. And I'm hoping that it'll be released sometime next year.
Very good. And so you have probably a lot of advice to give other authors out there who are in the same process as you are right now. And so that's another part of having you on the show, that you will be able to understand what everybody else is going through out here as far as trying to get published, whether it be through a traditional publisher or self-publishing.
Yes, yes. I've done both. And, you know, I'm no pro. You know, I'm not an old pro at it, but I can certainly relate to the struggles that people go through. And I feel like we're all blessed, and we have our foot in the door at a good time, because with the advent of ebooks and places like Lulu.com, CreateSpace through Amazon.com, the doors are wide open now to publishing, and you know, we have more options, and so, you know, I always want to encourage people to keep going for it, and you know, there's no, the stigma is starting to go away to the self-published. So, you know, just keep your heads up and keep working, keep writing, keep reading, and keep plugging away, and hopefully, you know, I mean, I wish everybody the best.
Yes, and I really would like to know, I know we've talked off air about this, but these zombie conventions, I would really like you to try to explain what they're like. I have just the image of a bunch of people shambling around with blood pouring out of their wound. I'm sure that that's not what it's like, but I'm really curious to know exactly what it would be like to go to a zombie convention. Could you tell us?
Well, a couple of them that I have gone to out in Pittsburgh, they do they try to break the Guinness Book of World Record for the number of people participating in a zombie walk, and they have it at the Monroeville Mall, that's the mall where they filmed Dawn of the Dead, George Romero's Dawn of the Dead in 1978. So they've had hundreds and hundreds of people just parading around in costume, walking through the mall. And the last one that I went to, it was funny because somebody decided to drop down onto the ground, and it instigated, I mean, everybody kind of cued in on it, and there was a feeding frenzy right in front of me. So I thought that was awesome, because it wasn't planned. It was a spontaneous thing, and it was really neat, and I have video of that somewhere floating around.
When you say feeding frenzy, what is that all about? Is this eating flesh and muscle and bone?
Well, pretending, of course, because zombies aren't real, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, reenacting, say, you know, a feeding scene from one of the zombie movies, where a large group of zombies will basically surround their victim and move in for the kill and pounce on them. And you know, I mean, obviously, since it wasn't something that was planned, there really wasn't any blood or guts. But it was pretty cool to see other people in the zombie walk say, hey, yeah, let's go over there and pretend, you know, reenact this feeding frenzy. And it was just really cool to see that, how people kind of play off from one another and you know, really get into it and have a lot of fun with it. So,
did you dress up in character too?
Actually, I didn't. It was weird because I'm known online as Zombie Diva, so I didn't have to. I didn't have to wear a costume. I just went as myself.
But there, I imagine, you know, being a fresh, live human being, I bet you they were kind of looking at you for a one-time quick meal, I would imagine.
Who knows? Who knows? But it was a lot of fun. And I also, you know, I've been to the zombie walks in Asbury Park here locally. And most, at least the major cities across the world even, not just the United States, but in the UK and around Canada and stuff, they also host zombie walks. So, and it's a good cause, because usually they entail to participate, you bring canned goods or things that could be used for, like, homeless shelters or whatever to help, you know, soup kitchens or whatever charity that they're working for. Generally, it has to do with feeding and, you know, helping, you know, indigent persons.
And that kind of ties right in with the feeding, then, I would imagine. That would It would be a good draw.
Yeah, there's always a charitable cause behind it. So, it's, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Robin,
we always have a lot of fun with
it. I didn't ask you off air, but do you have a website? I know you have a Facebook page, but do you have a website?
I do have a blog. I don't have a website yet because I feel like I haven't even really been keeping up as much as I used to with my blog. So until the book is out, I think then I'll actually create a website. But the blog is preludetoredemption.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And you know, I try to go in there. I don't just talk about my book, but I also link to various things and discuss things that, you know, that kind of catch my interest. It might be zombie-related. It might be, I think I had a, yeah, I do. I have a Beyonce video uploaded because I just like the video. But I do, I think my last post had to do with saving the chapel that appears in Night of the Living Dead. The chapel is featured prominently in the beginning, in the opening scenes to Night of the Living Dead, and the chapel is crumbling and falling apart. So I know that the town's called Evans City. The cemetery's chapel, there's an organization that's trying to get money together to help rehabilitate the chapel. So that was my last post. But like I said, it's not always about my novel. I'll talk about other people's novels or sometimes conventions that I've gone to. I'll post up pictures or it's kind of all over the place. You know, I'll post some updates on my progress, but really this year hasn't been too much about my novel, because once I completed it, I actually used to have links up where you could read sample chapters, but obviously once I got it under contract, I had to remove all, well, it wasn't requested that I remove it, but I did remove it out of respect for my publisher and for the fact that it's going to be different anyway after the editing than, you know, what was already posted. So
very good.
Yeah. So it's kind of all over the place, but I will, you know, as things progress and if there's any changes or, like I said, anything interesting I happen to come across, I'm always willing to promote other authors too. So
yeah. And we'll
I do a banner exchange too. So, I mean, any authors that might want to contact me, if they want, you know, I can host a banner that'll link to their site. And, you know, all I ask is, hey, you link back to my site, you know, and there you go.
Yep. And we'll have Robin on once again at the start of the new year. We're going to have her on full time here in the Writer's Lounge. And you will also be able to contact her, or at least she's been made an admin over at the Writer's Lounge Facebook page, so she can go in there and reply to all your comments. And I know we're picking up numbers now. I think we're somewhere around 750 likes, so that's a good thing. So with that, Robin, let's get on with the special guest here today. And his name is Kevin Folliard, and I hope I pronounced that name right. But I see he is on the line, and he's holding for us to start our interview. But the book, Christmas Terror Tales, is a collection of 16 stories written by Kevin Folliard. And this is how it's promoted on Amazon.com. 16 gripping tales inspired by classical horror and urban legends twist holiday themes into chilling cautionary tales. A mischievous snowman frames the children who built him for its misdeeds. A haughty priest offers shelter to a hideous monster posing as an orphan. A father brings home a cursed Christmas tree, resulting in terrifying, haunting experience for his family. From October through December, these stories of devils, spirits, murderers, monsters, and surprise twists will fascinate children and their parents. For well over 100 years since the tale of A Christmas Carol was told by Charles Dickens in 1843, the joyful season of Christmas time has always been populated by stories of ghosts and other eerie legends that have a tendency to persuade you to gather more closely with loved ones around the hearth of the living room fireplace. As you start to read the stories in the assemblage of holiday tales, terror isn't the word that I would use to describe the emotions that will seep into your consciousness. It's more like going through a amusingly scary funhouse, but as you go along in this book, you'll be able to look over your shoulder as you read and wondering if anyone or anything is in the house with you that shouldn't be. And yes, give it time, the terror will come. Along with his novel writing talents, Kevin Folliard is a screenwriter of the acclaimed video game parody Press Start and its sequel Press Start 2 Continue. He is also the creator and head writer for the companion monthly web series to the films Press Start Adventures. I'd now like to welcome Kevin to the Writer's Lounge. How are you doing, Kevin? And Merry Terror Christmas to you.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me. Hi, Robin. How you doing?
Hey.
Doing really good here, Kevin. And I'm really, I really have to apologize. Normally what we do is we read a segment of the books that our authors have on our show at the beginning in the commentary, but we've had some difficulties here with doing that tonight, and we were wondering if you wouldn't mind, as we go along with these questions here, to maybe read a segment of your book. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, I'd be delighted to do that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Okay, do you need a little bit of time?
No. Do you want me to read right now?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you've got there to read, go ahead and let it rip.
Sure, yeah, no problem. I'm going to read a short one. They're all pretty short, but this one is one of the shorter of them. It's called Wassail. And here we go. Mr. and Mrs. Scotch waited anxiously in their living room for the faint sound of sleigh bells in the distance. Goodness, Mrs. Scotch exclaimed. Here come some more. She fluttered to the window and pulled back the curtains. They're coming right down the block, dear. Gee. Now, now, Mr. Scotch replied with a soft laugh. Take it easy, take it easy. He limped into the kitchen, chuckling. How many this time? There are five of them, Mrs. Scotch squealed. Two women, a man, a little girl, and a little boy. Oh, a lively bunch! From a tall metal thermos, Mr. Scotch poured hot apple cider into five ceramic mugs. They're coming, Mrs. Scotch sang, bouncing up and down as sugary lyrics drifted up the walkway. She danced to the door and yanked it wide open just in time for a new verse of Silent Night to resonate through their home. Oh, dear, Mrs. Scotch shouted over the shrill, happy voices. Oh, my, Silent Night. More carolers are here, dear. Well, then, Mr. Scotch emerged from the kitchen with a tray of steaming cider. They'll need hot drinks to soothe those pipes. Oh, boy, Mrs. Scotch handed each caroler a cup of cider. The guests each savored the steamy beverages as they exchanged warm pleasantries. Once they had finished, they graciously returned their mugs, wished the Scotches a Merry Christmas, and rang their bells over to the next house. The Scotches waved farewell and shut the door as the cheerful holiday music died out in the distance. We're just about out of cider, Mr. Scotch warned. Do you think there'll be more carolers tonight? My gracious yes, Mrs. Scotch insisted. heat up some more. Mr. Scotch retrieved another pot of cider from the refrigerator and placed it on the stove. He sprinkled in some cinnamon, a little sugar. Don't spare the arsenic, dear, Mrs. Scotch reminded from the other room. That's right, Mr. Scotch joked. Forgetful old me. He emptied a small bottle of poison into the mixture, then stirred vigorously. Next year should be a quiet, relaxing Christmas at home. Won't that be nice, dear? Oh, it'll be swell, Mrs. Scotch exclaimed. Just wonderful.
Very good. Very good. And I almost feel like running out and fixing myself a nice cup of hot cider. In fact, I do have some. So, but I'm a little worried now that if I did drink that, that somehow that story would seep into it. So I think I'll hold back on that.
Hopefully you prepared
bit.
It yourself and you know exactly what's in that, Tom.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, that was fantastic. You did a good job. And Robin and I were talking earlier off air about how other authors could inflect their emotions into their writing. And I think you did a superb job. What do you think, Robin?
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, it was
Thank
great.
You very much.
An actor.
Yeah. Kevin, how long have you been writing and what inspired you to write about terror, especially terror at Christmas time?
Well, I've been writing for a very long time. I've been writing since I was a little kid. I probably started writing short stories when I was about 10 years old and just kept doing it year after year and gradually got better at it over time. I would say that I studied English and creative writing in college, so I perfected a lot of short story writing in college. And then once I was out of college, around 2005, that's when I was in a situation like a lot of people from this generation of college graduates where I had a hard time finding a job. There wasn't a lot to do, and I just sat down and just started fiction writing day after day. And that's when I got my first I wrote a young adult fantasy manuscript that I was trying to get published for many years. And so that's about how long I've been trying to break into the publishing scene, I guess, since about 2005. As far as why I write about Christmas terror, there's a few different ways to look at that, actually. For one thing, it's not my idea. I mean, people have been writing about scary things at Christmas time for a long time, and it could even go back to as far as Charles Dickens or even before Dickens. There were, you know, pagan traditions of telling scary stories that got folded into Christmas, and I think it was more of a European thing than an American thing, but it pops up from time to time. I think a lot of writers use Christmas as a backdrop for scary stories because it's sort of a fun, safe, happy time, and it's kind of fun to corrupt that with something spooky.
Robin, you got something?
Yeah, I definitely relate to when you said when you came out of college and began writing. And, well, I mean, you were writing in college, obviously, if you took English and creative writing. But,
right.
You know, but really started to focus on trying to create something and getting it published. And, you know, like I said, I can relate to that because it took me a long time. And in many ways, I'm still not there. But the one thing, you know, you keep trying and trying and trying and you learn more. That's a process that never ends, you know.
It really is.
You're
a process
always learning.
That never ends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And since then, since 2005, I feel like I've almost learned as much about writing in the past, 6 years or so than I did when I was actually studying it in college.
Right,
just
right.
Writing. And you know what, having a bunch of, having a good group of writer friends or a good network of writer friends
mm-hmm.
is really great too. That's mm-hmm. probably like one of my number one pieces of advice I would give anyone is to
mm-hmm.
find a good writer's group, whether it's an online group or a group in your local community. Like that's how I was able to self-publish is because I knew I wanted a polished professional book, and the only
right.
way I was going to get people to help me with it is if I was, you know, had a symbiotic relationship with these other talented writers. So I owe so much to those writer friends of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Kevin, the creative process, I think a lot of people that want to take creative writing, including me, would like to know what that exactly means. What is the process of being creative that you learned when you went to college?
You know, it's interesting. I think the creative process is just going to be something different for every writer. Different writers have a different degree to which they want to go through all those different steps, or they have very precise tactics that they use to brainstorm and flesh out their ideas. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's almost like, I think at the end of the day, it's almost something you can't quite teach, because you might teach a style or a practice that isn't going to fit for every single person. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some kind of universal ways to look at it. I mean, you want to have a good concept or a good premise, and then once you have something, once you know you have this really cool idea, it's a matter of building a coherent universe or a coherent situation around that idea. So sometimes you come up with a character that's really great, and you have nothing to go with that character yet, and you got to figure out, well, what could happen to this character that would make a great story. Sometimes you come up with a really cool situation, and you got to think to yourself, well, what kinds of characters would make this situation really come alive. So it's, to me, it's almost like when you get a good idea, it's like you have one piece of a puzzle and you just start building around that piece, I guess. That's the best way I can say, that's the best way I can look at conceptualizing for me. Have that idea and flesh it out. Almost like you have a scribble and you're making it into a doodle. Have you ever seen anyone do that?
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, some people need to follow an outline. They actually sit down and, you know, they have their characters and the story.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and they, you know, it's almost like a step one, step two, step three, and they
right.
have to have the whole thing outlined. And then you have some people that have kind of like a free flowing of consciousness that it just
mm-hmm.
comes out, and whether or not it makes any kind of sense, whether it's grammatically perfect or, you know, the spelling is great, you know, spot on, whatever. Some people that's just the way that they operate. And some
Absolutely.
People need to be very, have everything compartmentalized and, you know, set in
right.
stone. I have to do it this way and that way and whatever. Yeah, so it's interesting to hear how other people, you know, how they go about creating their work.
Right, I think that's definitely true, Robin. And I think I kind of fall somewhere in between that, I guess, because there are some stories for which I'll sit down and think, well, I got a great idea, but I don't have enough direction, and I do make an outline. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
I'll make a detailed outline, and sometimes I'll make a really loose one, which is bullet points and general things.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I find personally is that if I make an outline that's super detailed, that has every little thing planned out, then I'm not excited to write.
Mm-hmm.
I like there to be some wiggle room. I like to be able to discover some things as I'm going through that first draft. And I think that's more true of longer pieces than short pieces.
Because mm-hmm.
if you have a short enough story, obviously like the ones in Christmas Terror Tales, you can have it all planned out in your head and write a draft, and it's not that hard to keep track of what's going to happen to who and when.
Right, right. Yeah, interesting.
Well, Kevin, what was your
yep.
favorite story to write in the Christmas Terror Tales?
I think that's a good question. One of my favorite kinds of stories to write in this collection were the classic Christmas scary stories, because I wanted to write a collection of Christmas scary stories. There aren't too many collections out there like that, but if you look at pop culture and fiction, like I said before, there are a lot of examples of scary Christmas movies or episodes of TV shows or just urban legends that exist.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was looking at this as a collection that was for maybe 10 and up, but I wanted more of the emphasis to be on the middle grade readers. And I thought, well, there's going to be a lot of young kids, a lot of 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds who might be reading this and encountering some of these kinds of stories for the first time. So while older, more seasoned horror fans will read a story about a maniac dressed up as Santa Claus or something like that and go, well, I've seen that before. What else you got? I made a conscious, deliberate decision to include those kinds of stories in here anyway, at least a few of them, because I wanted to take those tried and true Christmas scary conventions, rather, and put my own spin on it. So I had the most fun with that, to take the smell is a good example of a Christmas urban legend that I sort of took that story, and I don't want to give away the end of that story necessarily, but I took it and I just sort of put my own spin on it, and the Maniac is another one. Yeah,
absolutely, Kevin. That was one of my favorites, and it was a surprise to me at the end what happened. And like I say, I'm not going to give away the story, but I was really caught up with that one. That kind of pushed it from, if you're going to put stars on stories, it kind of pushed it from a 4 to a 5 at the ending of that story, because I didn't even see that coming. It was really good.
Oh, thank you, yes. And I think the endings are really important, too. And that's what makes a story fun, too, is when you get to the end and you suddenly something clicks in your head and, oh, I've got the best ending for this right here. Because that the Maniac, I think, was one where I was writing it and I was following that sort of traditional urban legend that you see in a lot of different things. And I got to the end and I thought, oh, well, what if it ended this way this time? And I think it's a better story for having that ending, too.
Wow. When you were writing the book, where do you write? Do you have your own little office, or do you listen to music? Do you write during the day or at night? I mean, what's your environment like? You know, what do you do to get yourself in the mood to write? And when you were writing this book, you know, what inspired you, or what did you use to help inspire you? Or did you have Christmas carols going, or any of those horror movies that you've mentioned, or, you know, what, how do you do it?
To answer the first part of your question, I guess as to where I write, I guess I have kind of a boring answer. I mean, I just have my little office space in my dining room, and I have a desk and a chair, and I usually will try to write either in the late afternoon when I'm done with work, because I work from home, so that makes things a little easier for me. It gives me extra time in the day to write, because I'm not commuting. And sometimes I write in the evening. I know last month I did National Novel Writing Month, and that was the first time I had done that, and I had a lot of fun doing it. But I was writing pretty much from like 4 to, you know, 7 or 8 or so, and then I would go out and meet friends and reward myself for having written every night. That's a fun challenge. I think everyone should give that a shot at least once. Sometimes I won't write in a more traditional environment. For example, the story in Christmas Terror Tales called Something in the Basement was a story that I wrote because I was at the airport and my flight got delayed. So I went to the airport shop and bought a little spiral notebook, and then I just sat there and I just wrote this story, and all of a sudden my plane was there. So it's a good way to kill time and be productive.
You're not the only person that I know another writer who does exactly that. He brings a spiral notebook around with him everywhere, to work or wherever, and
yeah,
that way when
that
an
too.
Idea
yeah.
pops into his head, he just jots it down, and he could always go back to it later, but at least that way the inspiration doesn't, you know,
right.
flip
You're not
out
gonna
of
forget
his brain.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the good thing about when I'm working on a collection of short stories, of really short stories, is that you can go, oh, my train is late, but I had this idea. Why don't I try to write a draft? And it doesn't take that long sometimes.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about writing, short stories, is you're able to do that as opposed to sitting down and trying to flesh out a full fledged novel, such as I am. I have to write here in my office to do that. But one of the negatives in reading short stories for me is, if the story is good and it seems to have legs to go further in the development of character and plot, I'm sad actually when it ends, and I found that to happen in a couple of your stories there, Kevin. Any plans on making a story in Christmas Terror Tales, a novel?
That is such a good question. I think you're right. Some people like stories to be fleshed out to their fullest potential, and other people are satisfied with a really, really short version of a story, and there's almost no right or wrong way of looking at that. But right now, I don't have any plans of expanding any of the stories in this collection. I hadn't really thought of it until you asked. But one of the things about the way I wrote this collection, which was very deliberate, was I thought, to me personally, scary stories are almost, they're scarier when they're short. And what I mean by that is that it's almost as if the more detail you add to it, the more backstory the characters get, the more kind of bogged down it gets by these non-scary details. And part of what's fun about a scary story is that you hopefully, on some level, are relating to the situation the characters are in, and you are living vicariously through the scary situation while you're, of course, safe at home, hopefully, sitting in your chair reading. And to me, I thought that if I fleshed them out too much or expanded them too much, if a lot of these were, say, novellas or novels, you might lose some of that relatability. So I really tried to make a conscious effort to make each story sort of as long as it needed to be, no more, no less.
Yep.
Is this something that you've always wanted to do, to be a writer, or did you have any kind of a, you know, different dream job that you aspired to be when you were growing up?
When I was growing up, actually, I wanted to be, when I was real young, I wanted to be in animation. I wanted to make cartoons. And eventually, as I got older, I liked drawing and I liked writing. And eventually, as I got older, I found that I liked writing a lot more than I liked drawing. So that pretty quickly turned into what I wanted to do, actually. I wanted to write books, or sci-fi books, or fantasy books, just like you. I just thought it would be so much fun to do that day in and day out. And in a way, I mean, I am doing it in a don't quit your day job sort of way, which is what almost all writers have to do. And it's great. And I love what you were saying earlier, Robin, actually, about self-publishing, because you said something to the effect of the stigma of it is going away. It's as if suddenly there's this wild west of creative opportunities because of things like Kindle and YouTube. And it's really cool because there were so many closed doors 10 years ago, and now everyone can find an audience, and I think that's great.
Right, right. I mean, the responsibility is still there for us to put out the best product possible.
Right,
you know, I mean, because everybody wants to be a writer, you know what I mean? So,
I know,
of course,
yeah.
There's going to be, you know, there's still, and that's where the stigma comes from, of course, where you have, you know, this huge slush pile of, I don't like to use the word, but I'm going to. There's crap out there.
There is.
And I don't want to say that
is.
My stuff isn't crap. You know, maybe my stuff is crap to some people, but my writing might also, the same as your writing, anybody's writing, there's an audience for it. You know, so if we're going to self-publish, if you are going to go that route, the onus is on ourselves to make sure that it's edited properly and, you know, you have a good story to tell.
Proofread.
Yeah.
And
like
to have a
critique group and...
Right. Have writer friends, because we don't all have the luxury of having editors and publishers who are going to make us meet those deadlines, who are going to work with us. We have to go find the help ourselves, and we have to set our own deadlines, and we have to know when our work is ready to go. We have to know when it's time to stop fiddling with it too.
Yeah, I never know when to let go.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
It's
interesting that you say that, you know, that you like to sketch, and I'm assuming you like to paint, and pretty much anything art related. I'm the same way. And I found with writing, like you mentioned, that writing also is just an extension of getting those creative juices out. And you know, it's still artistic. You know, you're still, you know, it's in your head. What you're trying to do through your writing is to get into other people's heads so that they can, as they're reading, almost it play out like a little movie in their mind. You know, that's
when
you know that that's when you know that you've got them, is when they like you said, they could relate to the characters and see themselves as those characters, even though they're in the safety of their home. Now, it doesn't even have to be a scary story. It could be a fantasy story or whatever.
Sure, any story.
Yeah.
It's part of the fun of fiction is to escape the ins and outs of your daily life. That's why that's why people write fiction, and that's why people read fiction, too.
Now, the regards of that, Kevin, is that, you know, and you're talking about the Internet, a lot of this wouldn't have come about if we didn't have what we have nowadays. with the social media. It's a huge part of people's lives these days, and we ask all of our writers on the Writer's Lounge this, but how has it affected you as a person, a professional, and as a writer?
I would say it has affected me tremendously. Social media is the way to do it yourself, in a way, and that's the way to do the promoting yourself online. And it really helped me tremendously by using Facebook to help get the word out about Christmas Terror Tales. The Christmas Terror Tales Facebook is where I, you know, post all the updates. It's where I have trivia about the book. It's where, you know, almost all the Scary Story fans are going to stumble across me, aside from Amazon. And I think part of what helps you use that social media is having a good title and having a good hook to what you are publishing, if you are in fact self-publishing, because you need to have something that kind of sells itself, and that's why I went with Christmas Terror Tales too as my first self-publishing venture, because I knew, hey, there's a built-in audience for scary stories. Everybody, you know, knows about Christmas. Everybody knows about Halloween, and these are all things that people are searching for at this time of year. So that brings people to me while I'm trying to go to them at the same time. And I think that without social media, you couldn't do that.
And I also have to mention, too, Kevin, and I didn't bring this up, but the artwork in Christmas Terror Tales is phenomenal. I love the artwork. Who worked on the artwork for you?
That was J.T. Malloy. He is a Chicago area artist, and I'm very grateful for having him do this book for me and with me, because without those pictures, it's not even half as fun. It's these pictures really make the book for me. I wasn't going to publish a collection of scary stories without artwork. JT is very talented. He also wrote a comic book series called The Sapphire Specter, and you can find that on Lulu.com. Uh-huh. And that is sort of a supernatural superhero adventure comic, and it's really cool, really bright, really colorful, and really fun.
Cool.
Who's
your favorite author?
That's a tough question for me. I always have a hard time picking favorites. I will give a shout-out to Alvin Schwartz, because he was a big inspiration for the way I wrote Christmas Terror Tales. He is an author who collected urban legends and scary stories for kids, and I read his books growing up. They're called they're basically called the Scary Stories books. There's Scary Stories and More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and Scary Stories 3, and he wrote books for younger readers called In a Dark, Dark Room. But they are basically very similar because they are very short, precise scary tales for middle grade readers, and I wanted to write a book very much like that. I wanted to reach young readers and have them have a horror collection that was for them, that wasn't watering down the horror or wasn't copping out at the end and making everything okay, but that was still written on an appropriate level, that had appropriate content, that it was somewhere between R.L. Stine and Stephen King, let's say.
Yes.
Yeah, but I also really liked Tolkien, and I grew up reading Michael Crichton and Stephen King and all the same people everyone else was probably reading.
Wow.
I don't think you can mention horror without mentioning Stephen King. I think that's a given.
Absolutely not. He is the king, literally.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Do you have any other books that you've written or any future books planned?
Yeah, absolutely. I think now that I have found that the self-publishing process is something that's very doable, that you can reach an audience, I'd definitely like to do something else. I have a handful of young adult fantasy novels that I've written over the years, and I think my next step is going to be to take the first of those that I've written, which I've revised a number of times, and put it down and picked it up over and over again over the past 5 years or so, and I think I'm finally ready to just give it one last really thorough proofread and revision and get it ready, and probably do the same thing that I did with Christmas Terror Tales, get it out on Amazon and Kindle and let people know that it's there.
Now's the time to do it. I was just talking to Tom about that, as a matter of fact, and young adult fantasy, paranormal tales, anything like, you know, in that realm are so hot right now. And, you know, with the different means of self-publishing, I mean, it's nice if you could get a traditional publisher to pick you up, but I mean, it's
For sure.
you almost don't even have to. I don't know if you might have heard of Amanda Hocking. She has a series of books out, and she got picked up with a contract for like $2 million with St. Martin's Press for her trilogy, which I think now is a quadrology, but $2 million contract, and
wow.
That's not even all of her books, and she only just started to self-publish, I believe it was last March or April.
Oh my gosh.
2010.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, really, if you have a few young adult books that, you know, that are in that realm, you know, that are just sitting collecting dust, definitely haul them out and do what you've got to do and get them out there, because hey, look at this Christmas, everybody's getting Kindle Fire, you know,
I know.
Or whatever. So I'm telling you.
And remember,
yeah,
Robin,
I think you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, Robin, there's nothing wrong with self-publishing, right?
No, there's nothing wrong with self-publishing.
I want to make sure everybody heard that.
Yeah, I do. I do want to make sure everybody heard that. It's an inside joke, Kevin.
Okay.
Kevin, besides writing, what do you do for fun?
I like movies a lot. I like video games a lot, and I like to travel. I've been trying to see new places around the U.S. for the past couple of years. I just recently went to New York City at Christmas time. It was beautiful. I went to New Orleans over the summer. I went to Atlanta, and I just, you know, I'm trying to see new places and experience new things.
Well, if you ever get up to the Midwest, make sure you stop in Minnesota here and look me up. I'd love to sit down with you.
I'm nearby. I'm in Chicago.
Oh, well, you know, Mall of America, we could always pull up a chair there somewhere.
That would be cool. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Minnesota?
I've never been to Minnesota. It's actually on my list of places to go. I feel like I've been everywhere. Like I've been east, and then I kind of jump over a bunch of states, and I've been to California and Nevada and some places all the way on the other side. But I always forget that there's stuff slightly to the left of me.
Yeah, and you need to visit. You need to visit Robin in New Jersey too.
Well,
oh, yeah,
that's what
I was
going
to
say. The Christmas in New York is that I usually every year. That's what. My husband and I, our anniversary is on Christmas Eve, and we usually go to Rockefeller Center and see the tree and walk around and see the sights, and it's really amazing. So
it's beautiful there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you got a chance to see that. And I've lived all over the United States, so I know exactly what you're saying. You want to see as much as you can, and there's still a few places. I haven't been to Hawaii, but... But
Alaska and Hawaii are for down the road.
Yeah.
Well,
Alaska. Yeah.
I'm planning on Hawaii.
Yeah, Hawaii. I might go with you, Tom.
Well, it invitation's open there, dear.
Get ready.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, any other subjects that you'd like to touch on as a writer or subject matter from your book?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just like to say that I'm really happy with the response that I've had with this book. I feel like I've met a lot of Scary Stories fans through Facebook, and I'm really grateful for things like CreateSpace and for Facebook and for YouTube and all the different ways that we can promote ourselves, as we've been saying.
And don't forget the Writer's Lounge.
And, of course, the Writer's Lounge. I'm very grateful for you, Tom, too. One of the things that I just wanted to say was that you get a lot of different reactions to people when you go on the street and you hand them a flyer, or you just mention the concept, or you show them your book and you say, hey, I wrote this book of Christmas scary stories. And a lot of people will kind of like go, oh, that is so cool. They know, they kind of are right where you're at. They know why I wrote this book. They understand that a lot of people love scary things and spooky things, and that Christmas can be combined with that, and it can be a lot of fun. And a lot of people are confused. But eventually they kind of come around when I explain it. And then every now and then you run into someone who's almost kind of insulted by it, and I always feel bad because I don't want to insult anyone. I think I love Christmas. I love Halloween. I love everything about these holidays, and they're just so much fun. And I think there are a lot of different ways to look at Christmas as a commercial holiday, as a social holiday, as a religious holiday. And I tried to include all that in my book and write a book that was going to have ethical standards and morals, and also entertain and be scary and fun. So
yeah.
I hope that people can read it out loud with their family and their friends and just have a great time.
And as I said in my review of your book, being scared at Christmas time brings you together, doesn't push you apart, because everybody wants to hear a good ghost story, and you do that in the confines of your warm house with relatives and friends around. So in that aspect, you know, being terrorized is probably a good thing, and it's good that it's only inside your home and through a book instead of out on the streets in the real world. But I really enjoyed having you on today, Kevin. And
I'd like to
ask you, where can our listeners reach you on the web?
You can find me on Facebook. I have an author Facebook page. It's just my name, Kevin Folliard. And also there's a Christmas Terror Tales Facebook page. I also have a website. It's www.kevinfolliard.com, and there's a blog there as well where I like to write about the craft of writing as well as keep people up to date on different things. I did a blog there recently about scary story writing, which people might find to be fun to check out more in detail, post about scary story writing from me. And then I also have the Press Start episodes and DVDs that are for sale at darkmaze.com.
Very good. And I'm sure that Robin joins me in thanking you again for being on our program today. And hopefully we'll have you on at some point in the future when you write another book. We'd like to have you
back. I would
love
that.
And
thank you so much, Tom.
I hope that you pass along to everybody our program and let everybody know and promote your show here on the Writer's Lounge. And with that, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, Kevin, and keep the terror at a minimum and enjoy your holidays.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you, and you too. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Me too.
Bye, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Robin, that was kind of fun, a little bit of a different take on Christmas time. And I know that you were talking about New York City. There is a place in New York City, I believe, where is it, the Rockefeller Center, that has the Christmas tree up and
the
skating rink. And I've never been there, and I've always wanted to go there. But if you get there, bring me along with you in your imagination, would you?
Well, actually, Thursday I'm going to Atlantic City, so we're skipping New York City this year for Christmas.
Well, you
but
can
I've
take
been there
me.
So many times. Oh, you could go to Atlantic City.
Yeah,
I'll
you
place
can
a bet
take
for
me there
you on
too.
Your behalf.
You can take me there too. Drop a dollar in a slot for me.
Well, you don't even have to do a dollar. They have penny slots now.
Yeah, I know, but I'm a big spender.
Oh, okay. I'm a roulette girl myself.
Actually, I like that game, too. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and not only
yeah.
that, but when you go out to these places, it's just more fuel for the storytelling.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because I'm a people watcher, so you just never know what. I know that more than likely later on in the evening we'll walk the boardwalk, and there's all kinds of even in the wintertime, it could be freezing out, but there will be performers out there, homeless people out there, crazy drunken people out there, and all kinds of shenanigans. So I'm sure I'll run across some kind of inspiration.
Actually, I just had a great idea for a story that you could probably take up if you'd like to. But imagine zombies in a casino.
They are. They're the ones that are sitting there gambling.
Yeah, it's what, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning?
3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, that's right. You walk through and it's like, what are these people doing?
Exactly.
But then again, if I'm walking through at 3 o'clock in the morning, then I'm one of them.
Well, my friend, I thank you once again for hosting this special show today, and you are a guest host, but in the new year, once again, I would like to announce that Robin will be on full-time on the Writer's Lounge, and we're really happy to have you. I know you're going to have a lot of contributions to the show, and we're looking forward to meeting a lot of authors that are sort of connected to you also, and hope that you will forward the invitations to a lot of your friends out there to join the program here. And I believe probably in February we will be opening up more dates through April and May and on through the year of 2012. And hopefully we don't end 2012. I'm hoping that the Mayan...
I know. The Mayan calendar.
and I hope that we move into 2013. And thank you for being a friend also to me during this very difficult time that I've been going through. But I'm very happy to have you on the show, and look forward to having you on in the future.
Oh, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to get, you know, my sea legs going again in doing Blog Talk Radio, and I enjoy it. And I'll see what I can do to try to help contribute, you know, bringing in some more authors. And, I mean, I know a lot of people, and I'm sure they'd be more than happy to contribute. And I won't be such a blabbermouth maybe next time. I don't know.
No, you did fine. You did fine.
Thanks.
And next week on December 26th, we'll have J.T. Barber, Reflections of a Whisper. She'll be on, and I think, Robin, you're going to take a break next week. Is that correct?
I think so. If I can call in, I'll see what I can do about that. My plans aren't kind of settled yet. But I might, you know, if I can squeeze out a few moments, I might, you know, give at least do a call in or whatever. But no promises. But I am looking forward to, if I can't participate in the show, to at least listen to the archive. Because that sounds like a really interesting show, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and make sure everybody, once again, as Robin said, go out there on the Blog Talk Radio site for the Writer's Lounge and listen to the archives. We've done, this is our 9th show, so there's a lot of material back there to look at and to listen to. And with that, I'd like to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, and as always, good reading and good writing, and we'll see you next time on the Writer's Lounge. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in.